It's like he could take it and make it into like a unicorn horn.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Cloud.
And this is... We Watch Spookies.
Today's movie is The Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense is a 1999 supernatural horror film directed by M. Night Shyamalan, starring Bruce Willis, Toni Collette, Olivia Williams, and Haley Joel Osment. What a plot synopsis.
Well, Bruce Willis's character plays a child psychologist who pretty much spent his entire life trying to help children get over mental traumas. And then right whenever he's finally recognized, he is shot by a patient that he unfortunately couldn't help. After the wake of this, he finds this young man, little boy, who seems to have the same symptoms as the one that he failed. And so he tries to make it his goal to assist this child. The problem is the child actually has the ability to see ghosts. And since Bruce Willis can't see him, it creates a little bit of conflict between what can and can't be done. Until you realize at the end, he's dead himself. What a twist. But it's not if you paid attention to the fucking movie.
Well, yeah. So, not to just like skip right to the end or anything, but this it's obviously going to be something that's a central point of this, and is also sort of the thing that Shyamalan took from this movie and repeated over and over without the... See, the thing, I think the problem may actually be is that every other time he does it, it actually is a twist, and here it's really not. Yeah. It's like, maybe you're not really thinking about it, maybe you haven't quite figured it out, but it's actually all there the whole time.
Yeah.
It's not like, can you watch The Happening and realize it's the trees like way ahead of time? Probably not, because it's just like, that's the problem with the twists in his later movies, is they actually just come out of literally nowhere or almost literally nowhere. And so it's like, oh, look, thing that you never could have figured out, which is the Fight Club problem, where if you watch it again, it doesn't actually track. This totally does.
Yeah.
And it's also not dependent on the twist either, because if you watch it the second time and you already know, it doesn't really matter, because it's not really about the twist. It's about him being this guy trying to deal with this problem, and
the boy having to not be scared of what he can do anymore. Mm-hmm.
Well, and also just largely, like, it's kind of about people talking to each other, or like communication with each other, just in like a broad way, because like he wants his wife to talk to him and she doesn't.
Yeah.
And he just thinks it's because she doesn't like him anymore or something, not because he doesn't actually exist anymore as far as she knows. And the ghosts want to talk to somebody so they can finish their business and cross over or whatever, and the kid needs someone to talk to, and he wants to get the information out of the kid so that it doesn't happen the same way that it did with the other kid. And so it's not really, like you said, when we were like, after we watched it, like, this isn't really that scary.
It's not.
And it's kind of not. Like, every now and then it's like, ooh, look, a thing that's kind of scary, or it's kind of creepy for periods of time.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah. It's got good thriller based elements to it, but
which surprisingly is not one of the descriptors. Yeah. Literally everything is a thriller, it seems like. All kinds of things. It's like, hey, look, it's a thriller. It's like, no, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. And then sometimes when things are, they don't get good credit for it. But there's a story that John Landis likes to tell about seeing The Sixth Sense for the first time with his wife, who is I didn't mess up anybody in the credits. Now I'm going to try to say another name and I'm going to mess it up. Deborah Noodleman, who is one of the like biggest deal costume designers in Hollywood. She was the costume designer for the first Indiana Jones movie. Or she's like who came up with the hat and everything. And she's done many other important things. But so she looks closely at costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's a big clue through the movie is that Bruce Willis doesn't change clothes, really. Like, he does, sort of, but he only has, like, one set of things that we saw all of the night that he was shot, even though we don't know that he was killed. He has the suit and the sweatshirt that he puts on over the shirt, and he has that one shirt, and he kind of switches between them, and he has the coat that he presumably wore that night, because what they decided the rule was if it was whatever clothes he had interacted with that night that he was killed, those are the things that he has access to.
Yeah.
And so they were like 20 minutes into the movie, or 20 minutes past the point where he's killed, which is still like, I don't know, 15 minutes or more before we even know that that he can see dead people. So we don't even know that that's a premise. And she leaned over to John and said, "He's dead. Bruce Willis is dead." And he said, "What?" And she said, "He doesn't change clothes. Look." And he was like, "He doesn't change clothes." And it just like totally destroyed the twist for him the first time, because she noticed the clothes right away. And so that, like, you can figure it out. It's there to figure out. Even if you don't really know that much of the premise. Although I guess probably the "I see dead people" line was in the advertising, presumably. I don't know for sure. I didn't watch any of the trailers for it, but...
Well, I would say the biggest actual twist is the finding out that the guy who shot him could also see the dead people.
Yeah, that I think is actually more important, and that happens kind of mid-movie. He can't really prove it, but he like realizes that that's kind of probably what was going on he knows that
the kid tells him.
Yeah,
yeah, like the kid tells him, and it's just like, okay, well, what is this? Oh, well, I guess I don't know I'm dead, but shit got real.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also when the even if you just understand the way that, like, you use the camera in order to tell you what something that's being talked about refers to, when Haley Joel Osment is saying there's dead people everywhere, they don't know they're dead, we're not watching him say it. We're watching Bruce Willis react to it. It's on his face. It's close up on him. And so it's like, oh, so this is about him. It's especially obvious the second time, but there's all these things that are just like kind of movie making things that if you can sort of pick up on, you can kind of figure it out, but it doesn't do any damage.
Well, I'm almost kind of wondering if what we see in the movie isn't even real. Because one of the comments made is they see what they want to see.
Well, I think at least some of it is real, because he does help Cole to not be too afraid so that he can actually help the other dead people. And then it's things like there's a table or a bookcase or something in front of the cellar door or the basement door that he didn't know was there, and so he's trying to open the door and it won't open, and he's looking for his key that he doesn't have, but it's really, there's just a thing physically in front of it. Although that, I was kind of confused by that, because don't we see him in the basement a few times when he's like checking the files and stuff? But in between those times we also see him try to get in and he can't, so I'm not really sure. Well, do they have more than one basement?
Okay, so part of this does kind of make me wonder, because whenever I was watching it, I made comment that I'm keeping track of the rules.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we know that the ghost can interact with their environment. We have this,
sort of,
we have some lady ghosts. She seems to open cabinets, leaves fingerprints handprints on the table. We know that Bruce Willis has been filing and messing with papers in the basement.
Yeah, I don't know if someone else looked, would it look like that, or is it just because he knows what's in the files, he sort of picks up a ghost version of the file Because there are other times where he does something that he doesn't actually affect the actual world. He sits down in the restaurant and he just kind of sits on the chair and he doesn't like pull the chair out or anything. So there's nothing that people would notice that can't see him.
Well, that's something that
he does break the window, but it takes a lot. He's really angry and it takes a lot of force and effort to do it.
But see, that's something. It's like it's still showing that the ghosts themselves have the ability to interact. Mm-hmm. So we know they can touch stuff.
We don't ever see him open a door, though. We see him in places, we see him other places, we see him go up to places, but the only time we ever see him even try is the basement door, which then he can't open.
And every time we see him, except for the last time, he always seems to go in there. So we don't see him actually go in, he just seems to magically be there.
And he's in Cole's apartment, like when we come into the scene, he's already sitting there. And we never see him actually open a door. I mean, he must at least think he's opening a door. Because
that's what he wants to see.
If he just phased through stuff because he's a ghost, he would realize that he's a ghost. And he doesn't realize. So there are things that I think might be kind of, we're not really going to give this a rule. We're just going to kind of cheat by not showing you stuff. Like you commented on that there's one time where they're standing outside. And there's more sunlight than there normally is the rest of the movie because it's pretty much cloudy the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's framed in such a way that where his shadow would be is below frame.
Yep.
And so I don't know necessarily if he wouldn't cast a shadow, at least to him, or not.
Well, see, that's what makes me wonder.
What happens if he looks in a mirror?
Maybe he just sees himself because that's what he expects to see.
I guess so, yeah.
But it's like, how much of it is us seeing what he wants to see, so he'd be seeing it, or how much of it is what would be considered real via the child?
Yeah, well, we do see Cole when he's not with Bruce Willis. Malcolm.
With the girl,
I expect is real.
Like we know that she was holding the sheets up, like they were over her head.
Yes.
So it's.
But that was according to Cole, who can see the ghosts.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess there is. Yeah, there is some physicalness to some of it, like the cabinets and things, but. I'm not really sure. Because the movie is dependent on us seeing what Malcolm wants to see most of the time, there were every now and then a stylistic thing that was kind of neat on its own, but was weird because it was changing the perspective in a way that didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
Like when he's doing the mind reading thing, mm-hmm. which actually Bruce Willis's acting in that is really good because there's so much going on in his face where he's thinking about what to ask and he's reacting to the answers and he's just thinking and feeling stuff. And it's really good. I do think, we commented, sometime back on the, Chris Pine's drunk acting in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bruce Willis's drunk acting is quite as good in the opening as that was. Some of it seems a little bit acty, but
fucking Dr.
but Seuss. The rest of it, yeah. I do think that the rest of it is like there's. I think we forget sometimes that Bruce Willis is actually a really good actor
because we just think of him
as like action dude. But,
action dude.
but he's not just action dude, and he can actually act. But in that scene when he takes a step away, like when he takes a step forward, we usually see him take a step forward. Mm-hmm. Like we see like his shoes step forward and it's framed really low. But when he takes a step back, sometimes it's this point of view shot of Cole. And he sort of steps back and the camera just moves back and it's first person. And that's weird because that's the only time in the movie that the sort of story perspective is that obviously from Cole's side. Mm-hmm. And that we're not just from either Bruce Willis's side because we're seeing the world his way or we're totally on the outside, which is most of the time when we're with Cole, except I guess we're seeing the ghosts, but it was kind of weird. It's like, well, why Bruce Willis is in this scene? Why are we in first person with Cole? But it's just, I think it's just Shyamalan likes to do like technical camera stuff. Like there's a lot of in a very different stylistic way, but in the same way that Spielberg makes the camera really obvious that there's a camera there and there's lots of movement and sort of style to it. And not although Shyamalan does in at least this case do a little more, things are kind of shaky for scary reasons than I would like. It's not like Abrams made it or something. But he uses the camera like that a lot. He does big swooping shots or movement or first person things, or like the beginning of sometimes it is distracting, though, like the beginning of Unbreakable.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's that one super long shot of them talking on the train. That's the whole opening scene, and we're in the seat in front of them, as if we're looking between the seats back at them, and the camera kind of moves to one side, and we watch them talk, and then it moves to the other side, and it's like uncomfortable and distracting, and it's hard to listen to what they're saying because the camera stuff is so obvious. I don't think it's anywhere near that extreme at any point in this, but no. But it you can see
there was a little
that
bit
he's
of
already
like,
kind of the kind of director that he's going to be,
yeah.
Later.
Well, I would say there was only really one scene that bothered me enough because it felt like the camera was still but vibrating.
Which one was that?
Fuck, what was going on? Because it was earlier in the movie.
Hmm.
I think it had to deal with the when he was talking shit to the teacher.
Hmm.
And it's like the like
that scene is weird because yeah. Then there's that weird fisheye thing at the end of it where the teacher kind of leans over.
Yeah. It's like, oh God, stop.
And I didn't actually really understand what was going on in that scene actually make the teacher regress into stuttering? And why is that something he knows? Because he's not dead.
Well,
so,
I think that, okay, so the thing that gets me is I can believe that a ghost said it to him.
That could be, yeah.
But
I kind of, I wonder who died that's sort of haunting the school that knew the teacher. Maybe one of the old teachers died? Because I think he says something about when he was a student, he was a stutterer. And so maybe it's something like that, but
why would the teacher character like egg on, be like, oh, say this, it like that's what the kids taunted him with, like I would suspect
yeah,
it would
weird.
Be another another student, another child of some kind from that period, but there was never a comment made about said student happened to die.
No, here. And we never see who that character is. The only dead people we see in the school are the people that were hanged when it was the courthouse,
and then the lady who burned to death.
Yeah.
But that was at the part of the theater.
That was, the theater.
Part. And that's all we get.
So I don't even know where in the building, if it's even the same building or what. So,
yeah,
there's never any explanation of that. And I think it only really, the only reason for that scene is so that he can get into trouble.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't serve any other purpose. It's not connected to anything else. And then it's really weird later when the teacher is nice to him again at the beginning of just before the play. Because the last time we saw him, he was leaning over him in a fisheye lens, like stuttering and screaming at him. So
shut up, you freak. Like, really?
Yeah, that was so forced because there's this freak runner. Yeah. That the kid at the beginning says, and it's, I don't think that's a thing that's that common that actual people say to each other. I don't think I've ever heard anyone call anyone else in real life a freak.
Like, not even back in the period of time this movie was
released.
No,
because I would have been 9 when this movie came out, so I think it would have, I don't remember.
Target demographic for freaks!
Kids calling other kids freaks, or, you know, and I was picked on and made fun of for stuff. Nobody ever called me a freak that I remember, and I think I would, but it's almost like it's like magic. Like, calling someone a freak is like this ultimate insult. And beyond anything else anyone says, And I guess these are sort of especially mean kids. They're like beating him up and locking him into doors and things. Which I was kind of glad that they did sort of resolve that. Like the mom calls the other mom and is like, we have to talk about your kid and his friends and what they're doing to my kid, because this is not okay. Because it kind of goes away when it happens, because he's passed out or whatever, and then they're at the hospital and there's the social worker, and yeah. And there we don't have a scene. I was at least glad at first that somebody went to find him.
Yeah.
And that they weren't like, oh, well, he did it, and get him in even more trouble with it, with his mom and with the other moms. That, I mean, they're very obviously standing there watching what's going on and not helping. And
well, like,
they probably don't have spotless kid reputations.
Don't even say it like that. Of course they're watching. They fucking put him there.
Well, no,
help.
But I mean, nobody knows. That I mean, they like, put that's him the, there, but then the thing, like, other people show up and they're just standing there looking. So,
if I was to put somebody like in a little closet space thing, like I'm just gonna walk off. Like I already know what's gonna happen. They're just gonna be stuck there until someone finds them, and I'm not gonna be hanging around.
They want to listen to him scream, though.
Yeah, but that's kind of weird.
They're like little kid bully arsonists. Like they want to watch it burn, and that's how they get caught. Is they hang around,
and then they burn. Yeah. Like, no, the fire's nice. And now you're on fire, you dumbass. I think I don't really like the mom so much. I think she kind of redeems herself at the end, but it's not really because of her, but as much as because the son knew what to say. But it's like, he does know what to say.
Yeah. I don't like that car scene as much as most people do. Like they showed us that scene in college as like an example of a great scene in a movie for I don't remember what specific reasons,
not,
but like
it's not great.
It's an okay scene, but it's really over. It's kind of over dramatized and kind of extreme in a way that most of the rest of the movie isn't.
But okay, so if you're a parent and you're afraid, this is to you listening. If you're a parent and you're afraid that maybe your kid isn't quite gelling with the other kids, get over it. Don't push shit like that onto your kid, because that's how your kid becomes a sociopath.
Oh, yeah, making him have the friend walk like, him to school
just
and
stop.
Stuff. Yeah.
Just stop. Like, your kid will take care of it on their own. It may take a little bit longer than you like, but they're not your friends. They're going to be their friends. So step off. Your kids will appreciate it when they get older. Oh, my mom was such a bitch. Like, I don't even like Tommy. Why does she keep inviting him over? He likes to give me wedgies. Ugh. It's that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And that's almost what we see here, except they're, like, really small for that. I don't know. Maybe give him a wedgie. What the fuck? I'm trapped him in a closet space, whatever.
Yeah. The really suspicious tiny closet at the top of the giant spiral staircase.
Yeah. And I do want to know what's the purpose of that spiral staircase, because it leads to nothing.
But it basically does.
But that tiny little closet.
There don't really seem to be that many rooms like off of it.
Yeah.
And at least not that we really see.
Well, like we get multiple angles, and every time we see someone walk up it, we get to see the wall that they're against, and we don't see any corridors branch off of it.
Yeah. It's just. Yeah, it's stairs to the crawl space. I mean, their main job is just to be red, because that's one of the main other clues. It's just things are red if they're important and related to dead people. Like Bruce Willis's doorknob is red.
The
balloon is red. The stairs are red. Cole wears a red sweater. Although it seemed like at first, well, not at first, but at a certain point, that red was sort of like ghost garlic for vampires, because he has the tent that he's made out of red blankets or something, and that's where he goes to hide from the ghosts, which then doesn't work by the end. But so it seems like red keeps the ghosts away, but then every time we see ghosts around, then there's also red. And he's wearing red all the time, and that doesn't stop anything. So I'm not really sure what the rules are about the red, except that it's important and relates to people being dead.
I also don't like the idea of turning on a flashlight when you're hiding in the tent in the dark. Yeah. You'd think that'd make it easier for them to see you.
Well, they're ghosts. I don't know what they can...
And then she fucking just comes right in.
She does, yeah.
And throws up on herself. And he panics. But I like that scene because it's like he gets some time to take a deep breath, reconstruct himself, and he does it slowly. And I'm like, all right, see, like, this is good. Like, assess the situation, advance. And he's like, okay.
It's so,
what
I mean,
is this. And then we get cut, and it cuts away from it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he says, do you have something to tell me? And I want to go two ways with this because I talked about Bruce Willis's acting. Like, Haley Joel Osment is like, I don't even know how old, like probably less than 10.
And he does really good in this movie. Like,
and it's such a difficult part. And there's so much subtlety and so much work he has to do. And he's so young. And just like that, just him, like, you see so many things go through his mind when he comes back. And he's trying to get to the point of being able to ask what they want. And it's, he's really great.
I think this may be the best child acting I've ever seen. Cause just being a chipper child, that's like, I'm sorry. I don't care if you're in a Disney special or some shit. Like that doesn't require extreme amounts.
No.
Compared to like this, which is very bleak and very dark, and he has to go through all of this really negative emotion.
Yeah.
For someone as young as he is during this role.
Yeah, it doesn't take that much acting to be the Beaver and Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Jerry Mathers, but it's just it's not a super demanding part. But then the other thing is, it seems like his character's job in the movie is to whisper everything.
Yeah.
Because he does, like, it's always just like you think, like, he says, I see dead people. And that's the line you hear repeated all the time. But that's the way he says almost everything he ever says in the movie. And I think it is a choice because he doesn't sound like that normally all the time.
Well, there was the scene where after Bruce Willis realizes the ghosts are real.
Yeah, I guess he breaks out of it now and then.
And he's like up a little bit higher and he does talk to him in a normal voice.
Oh, yeah, when he's in the church the second time. Yeah. It's actually, let me see how old he would have been at this point. So he's 30 now. And this was, so he would have been 10. So he's, and this is the same year as Phantom Menace. So you can compare.
This is real pod racing.
You can compare this. Now this is pod racing. It's not real. It's no real. The Real Housewives of pod racing.
These are real ghosts.
Yeah, like the monsters in Scooby-Doo were real that one time. Actually, not that one time, because it was that one time, and then it was every time after that, and it fundamentally did damage to the Scooby-Doo franchise. But that's a story for a different time. I think some of it may be, like, sure, you have to have a really good child actor, because there aren't that many of those, and especially to play, like, heavy emotion and stuff like this, that acting largely comes from having experienced a wide variety of emotional states and situations and reactions and observing other people and being able to draw on that. And kids just don't have much of that because they haven't been around very long. And so when they're able to do it, it's especially amazing. But I think that having a really well-written character helps also. Because I don't think that Jake Lloyd is necessarily a terrible actor. I don't think that Anakin is his fault in Phantom Menace, which is the same year. He's a little bit younger, too. I think he's 8 or something at that point. But it's just so much of, like, no one could say those words and have it be good.
Yeah.
It's just like some of the things he has to say, there's just no way, you just can't, like, anybody could say it and you just be like, oh, I just can't believe this. Like, no one could say, are you an angel? They live on the edge of space. I've heard the Spice Miners talk about them and have it be good. Just nobody could.
Like, what is this fucking Dune?
Yeah. So much spice mining in space. So much.
I want to know what kind of fucking spices these are.
I don't know. Space spices.
You see that asteroid? Pure spice.
Yeah. Kind of pure asteroid spice.
What kind of spice are you on?
In space, all spices are imported.
Intergalactically.
Nope. I don't have the joke. I almost had a joke. I don't have the joke, so I'm not going to tell it badly. So you have something to say about Bruce Willis's hair.
It is, oh my god, I hate his hair so much. It's like he's got like the perfect widow's peak, but all the hair, it's like he could take it and make it into like a unicorn horn, but instead it like kind of curls back.
Yeah, he's doing like a sweep across,
but it's like a terrible sweep across because it's like just a little triangle of hair. Like, you can't know. Just thank god he went bald.
Well, I think he might already have went bald. I don't know for sure, but on the DVD, there's some some interviews and stuff in the various featurettes, and he is like what we think of as Bruce Willis bald, and it's from that time. So I'm not sure if maybe the sweep across is fake.
Well, like, that's fine if it's fake, but it still looks terrible.
Well, like, it's not fine because it's fake and it's bad. Like, you know, Billy Joel says that people think I've made the name Billy Joel up, and I always thought I'd come up with something better than that if I was going to make a name up. It's like, if it's, you're going to have fake hair, like, you can have better hair. Why does it have to be, like, bad? It didn't bother me like it bothered you, but it is kind of odd looking.
Well, the thing is, like, every time it shift, I could see it. And it would catch my attention. And so, like, he would just move his head slightly and the whole thing would just shift out of position.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
well, because I don't think he has anything in it, really, to hold it in place. I think it just kind of, he just puts a comb and kind of sweeps it across. Maybe he used a little water or something. But there's nothing to hold it there. So, yeah, like, he looks around and it just goes, whoop. Just gonna, it's, but it does look odd. I mean, it's made worse, I think, by that because of the way it's swept across on the side, it's swept across from the indention back into where the rest of the hair starts is so much further.
Yes.
So it makes it look like his head is like uneven. Yeah. So it's like it goes like there's a deep a piece that goes back. And then on the other side, it's only like half as deep as that.
Like, he's got Vegeta's hairline. That's what it is. Like, it's just full on point. Like, it might as well just go straight to his eyebrows.
It's, yeah.
Like, it is hardcore.
It is.
Oh,
it's extreme.
Stop, please.
And it's much, yeah, it's much better. Well, even when, because this is, I guess this is over 10 years. What is first Die Hard? 87 or 86, something like that? 88?
Around that time.
So this is about 10 years after. And in that, he's not quite as bald yet, I guess, but he has cop hair, so it's cut real short.
Yeah.
And there's no like dimension to it.
Well, like in The Fifth Element, it's the same way.
Yeah, which Fifth Element is in a similar 88 as original Die Hard. So The Fifth Element is let's see if I could spell fifth.
5th.
Well, no, it's not 5th, though. It's not the that it's not do, it's not the do, favorite 50. No, because
if you're doing a search, it'll pull it up.
It's fifth, so it's not what you would think. 97, so it's 2 years before actually. This, so he'd already. I think it's fake. Yeah. I think it must be fake.
God,
it's not a real sweep across. It's a fake sweep across. Which. Why? Why give him a fake sweep across? Like, I don't see any reason why
he has to have the hair to look like he takes care of children. Because if he didn't, he'd be like he's about to walk away from an explosion.
I guess the sweep across softens his character, makes him more of a regular guy than the diehard hair does. Yeah, because I guess so. Because it's like you're not gonna fight terrorists with a sweep across. So. I mean, not literally with a sweep across, but...
I think of, like, Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
He doesn't have a sweep across.
I know, but that's what it made me think of.
There was kind of an odd thing that they did in the titling of things, where it doesn't say 1 year later, like most movies does.
It just says next fall.
Yeah. The next fall. It's the next fall, which is, in effect, a year later, but it doesn't say that. So we're going to call it something else. It's going to be the next fall. I do kind of wonder if maybe we shouldn't see him. Either we shouldn't see him get shot at the beginning, or we should see him like in the hospital or something and then have the next fall cut. So there's more false implication that he survived it. I feel like that's one of the things that makes it a little easier to figure out. It's like the... in the beginning of Rope, the Hitchcock movie Rope, you see the guys kill the guy and put him in the box. And the producer of that said to Hitchcock, I don't think you should show it. I don't think you should ever see the guy, because the tension of the movie is better if we think from their reaction to people almost looking in the chest that the guy they killed is in there. But if we don't know, we don't know. And then it's a bigger shock at the end when it's dumped over and he actually is in there. And seeing him there does some damage to the tension of it. And I kind of agree with that. But of course, Hitchcock was Hitchcock and he was going to do what he wanted because he's Hitchcock and he knows these kinds of things. Although apparently not in all cases, because I do kind of agree with the other side of it. And I wonder if it might not have been similar here, where we do. The problem is we need the interaction with the other kid. Maybe we could get to it in another way. He could be listening to the recordings or watching the tapes or something. Maybe we don't need to see it at the beginning. I'm not sure. But I think seeing the kid there, seeing him shot, and then we cut from that to the passage of time. Doesn't give us
Are you talking about the dude in his underwear?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a kid anymore. He's got to be at least 20-something.
Well, yeah, but you referred to him as the kid earlier, so I've just been continually referring to him that way. He's the other child.
Kid.
The other Wahlberg.
That grew up and stood in his underwear for some goddamn reason.
Well, that was his idea, actually. That was Donnie Wahlberg's idea.
I don't give a shit whose idea it was. It's still weird. Like, dude,
it's weird, yeah.
Dude, why are you in your underwear in my bathroom, bro?
Well, the way he explains it, because he wanted to be naked. He came to Bruce Willis and said, I think I should be naked in this scene because he's totally given up on everything. He's totally exposed. He's about to kill himself and you, and he's not, like, he doesn't have anything left to hide. He's given up. And so the imagery of him being naked also would intensify that. And Bruce said, yeah, I like that. And so then they went to Shyamalan and told him the idea. And he said, yeah, I like that. We should do that. And then they actually got to the moment of, or not the moment, because they did actually have to produce the underwear, but, or not produce it, but they had to like weather it down and make it look like he's been wearing it for like 6 months straight. And then he just hasn't cared at all. And, they decided before it actually came time to shoot it, why don't we have you wear some underwear? It'll be mostly the same effect. We'll see the clothes scattered everywhere, but you won't be like actually naked. So, but that was his original idea, was to have it be totally naked. His experience with the movie is kind of weird because he tells these stories about how during the shooting, like, he would walk around the city at night by himself and not go into his hotel and sort of like try to create this feeling of isolation in himself. And it's kind of weird. But I guess it's a pretty extreme scene. It works pretty well. He does come off as really, really like worn and scared, and that he's gone through all this trauma. I don't know if necessarily you, I mean, if that's the way you act, then fine. I've always had sort of an aversion to the kind of method idea, because if you're really doing it, then it's not acting.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that you don't actually have to freeze Leonardo DiCaprio to death and make him eat raw fish in order for it to look like he did that in a movie. So
you don't actually have to have him be attacked by a real bear.
No, you don't. We're making a movie. And I know that that may seem at odds sometimes with when I give credit to movies for doing actual stunts, and you know, they use real cars and they actually jumped over that thing and Tom Cruise hangs off of airplanes and stuff. But there's kind of there's a line.
Yeah.
But somewhere that I don't know if I can actually fully legitimately justify, but it does seem like I don't see why Daniel Day-Lewis has to actually pretend to be Lincoln for 2 years in order to play Lincoln in a movie. Yeah,
well, like, what's his face with the huge nose that was the pianist or whatever?
The pianist?
Yeah, the pianist.
Was that not hang on. The pianist. With the big nose. Okay, so the first two people credited in The Pianist are Adrian Brody and Thomas.
Adrian Kretschmer. Brody.
So it is Adrian Brody. Yeah, does he have a big nose?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
Oh, he does have a big nose, yeah.
All right. Well, you should look.
His nose is just like taking over this photograph.
You should always listen to me. But it's like he like left his girl, so like just like isolated himself in like this tiny little New York apartment for like ages. Just so he could be like, oh, I'm going to play the pianist. And then, what was it? It's like, hopefully I'm getting the story correct. But there was another movie he was on, and he needed to be, like, tired. And so he, like, ran around the studio, like, twice. And then when he got to the set, one of the guys he was acting with, he's like, you know, you could just act like you're tired.
Yeah.
And it's just like, ah! Got him!
You could just... Well, now there are certain things like if you watch some of the special features for, I don't remember, one of the Star Wars prequels. I don't remember which one it is. I think it's 3. I think it's like doing some of the like the fighting on is it Mustafar that's the like lava hill planet that they fight on at the end.
Anakin, I have the high ground.
I have the high ground.
You're a chosen one.
Now, see, there is something to acting, I guess, because that whole business, like, you were the chosen one, you were my brother, I loved you, like, you could put that in someone else's hands besides him, and it wouldn't be as good. So, there is something to say for both halves of it. But, so, they're doing the ADR for the fighting, because they're not actually on Lava Hell Planet, but there's lots of other stuff going on. There's fans blowing, and there's all kinds of stuff when they're actually shooting it. And so they're doing ADR of the dialogue and like grunting sounds and stuff. Who plays Anakin? Older Anakin?
Exactly.
No, I don't want it to be that way because it's not like that. I just can't think of, everybody knows I can't think of names. Like if you've ever listened to any other episode before this, I can't remember names. So Hayden Christensen, he's in the vocal booth and he's got to do some of the things, and he's trying to do one of the lines after they've been fighting for a while, and like he does like a bunch of push-ups before so he can have that out of breath sound in his voice, and stuff like that is fine.
Well, like he's not running around the studio twice to be out of breath.
No.
Yeah, like there's a difference between here, let me do this to kind of get worked up, and then no, I'm going to fully exert myself. I'm like, calm down, bro. Calm down.
Yeah. And so that there's a lie.
So did they like beat the child so like the child could have good acting? Like I need to seem like I'm abused.
No, it wasn't Shyamalan, it wasn't the producers, it wasn't anybody on the movie. It was Donnie Wahlberg himself made all of these choices. Like he decided to wander around the city and not eat and not sleep and not go into the hotel and not talk to other people. Like that was all him. It was, nobody told him to. I do want to say also that this isn't nearly as big a deal as the like 10% of our brain thing, but you don't have five senses. You have at least nine, maybe 11, because there's like temperature and balance, and so there's more than just five. So this whole sixth sense business, it's not like an actual like crime in language the way that the fourth kind movie is, just in its title and premise, where it's like the state that the kinds of alien contact, and then it's like this kind is like actual contact, and it's like, no, that's in the or no, it's like abduction or something, whatever the fourth kind is supposed to be. And it's like, no, because the third kind includes actual physical contact. Now, that could mean that they stand and like wave at you, or you shake hands, or they abduct you and stick a probe in you. Like all of those are physical contact. There's only three kinds. So your fourth kind is bogus. But.
And you all know where that probe went.
Yeah. I can never remember. So there's two. Two of my favorite lines, and of course everybody's favorite line from GTA San Andreas, which is the big smoke drive-through order. But then the other one is something that the truth says, and he's talking about having been abducted by aliens and been probed, and he has this name for the probe, and this like it's as long as Big Smoke's thing is, and I can never remember all of it enough to actually say it. And right now it's been long enough since I've heard it that I can't remember enough of it to even sort of say it the way that people misquote the Big Smoke thing, but I would like to be able to say it, because that's what I always think of when I think of being probed by aliens.
I need two number nines.
No. No.
I just wanted my cheeseburger. Plural.
What kind of dip you get at a burger place anyway? And do you really need extra?
Have you seen Big Smoke? Of course you get extra.
Man, you're already spreading out. One scene that wasn't over-dramatized was the dad watches the videotape at the funeral scene. Like, that was extreme.
Yeah.
And, like, watching him watch it and seeing it happen, and she's, like, pouring Pine Sol or something into the food.
Oh, fuck that, son.
It's like,
that bitch got shot.
And then just like they look over at her. She's wearing a red dress. Also, it's another instance of red. just the whole funeral is just like. Whoosh. And if Bruce Willis did it, a sweep across would sweep around, but he doesn't.
Probably whiplash somebody.
that's where the abuse is coming from. He's spending too much time with him. He's getting whiplashed by the sweep across. It's an interesting idea to have the ghosts not be able to see each other.
Yeah. Like, it's a bit different, but at the same time,
it is different.
Like,
it's neat that it's different. It's not very helpful.
No, but I think it kind of helps build with the suspense, where it's like, only he can see them. Like, it wouldn't make any sense if they saw each other, because that kind of breaks down their own elements from when they died.
Yeah, and then they would know that they were dead.
Yeah, because that's one of my notes that I had, is like earlier in the movie when we see the child, Cole, right? Cole.
Yeah, Cole.
Cole in the church, and he's got the knights, and he's speaking Latin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my thoughts was like, I wonder if there was like an old Knights Templar that had been in that area who had died.
Oh.
And like that is the ghost who is in the church, and he says things, and the kid's just listening.
Yeah, because where did he get the Latin? We never find that out.
Yeah,
I liked that scene too. I like Bruce Willis goes and pulls out a dictionary of Latin. The name of the book is, and it's the oldest book ever. Yeah. And he's like leafing through, translating the thing that he said.
And then, so you take that. And then he steals the porcelain figure, And when he takes it, we don't see it what it is. We only see it from the back, so we don't know what type of church it really is comparatively to the figurines that they have displayed. And then, like, later in the movie, when he's hiding, we get a really good close-up of all of, like, these, like, Jesus statues that he's been, like, using to keep the ghost away.
Jesus and Mary and saints and all kinds of things, because he's trying to ward off the spirits or something.
And then it's like, bam, that is the one that we witnessed stolen.
Yeah.
Because, like, Bruce Willis sees it.
Yeah. I did. That was actually something I noticed this time, knowing what happens, was that there's nobody else in the church, really.
No.
Bruce Willis is looking at him. He steals the thing anyway. And I thought, oh, he can steal it with Bruce Willis looking because he knows that Bruce Willis is dead and can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's actually a thing or if it just seemed like a thing, but because I don't know, I guess he normally most of the other people have really seriously obvious things about that. They are dead. They're hanging from nooses in the hallway.
Like their
they
head
have their head blown out the back. They're throwing up everywhere.
Lady with like all of the slit wrist.
Yeah. But I guess because he sees it after. If he doesn't have the coat and stuff on, you could see the like he the all the blood on the back of Bruce Willis's shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But and so I guess Cole can see that, because that's the thing I don't really know is how, because they just look like people to us when we see them, unless they have something obviously wrong with them. How does he know when he sees a ghost that it's a ghost and not just a person? Because Bruce Willis is just acting like a person. He's walking around. Yeah. He's sitting there. He's talking to people. Or he's talking to him anyway. There are suspicious things like he's sitting there in the living room with the mom. Cole comes home. She doesn't say, this is this guy he's going to talk to. He's going to help you.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything to her. I do think maybe there are some questions that don't totally hold up. Like in the way that Fight Club is like, but wait, how would people act like this with this person that didn't exist for this entire period of time? Does he not eat? Does he never try to talk to anyone but his wife? And the guy that wants to do his wife now that he's not there, he just kind of yells at him every now and then. It does seem like in a year of time, something would have led him to at least have suspicions that something is wrong.
Well, I can look past some of that, since earlier in the movie, they kind of, it's like, oh, he spends all of his time trying to help these kids, and he doesn't have any time for his family. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because that's going to be like one of the very last things that he says.
It's yeah.
Like, you were never second. But
except they're like getting drunk on Dr. Seuss wine together. Yeah. So they do things together sometimes.
Yeah.
Which they have now not done for an entire year with no explanation. And we don't have like in Ghost, the Patrick Swayze movie Ghost, he gets shot in an alley and he gets up and chases after the guy that shot him and he gets away and then he comes back to the alley where he was shot and sees his girlfriend over his dead body and realizes what's happened to him.
Yeah.
We don't have a moment like that with Bruce Willis. He doesn't, we don't see, because we go from he's shot, he's laying on the bed, he's not dead yet, to the next fall. And so did he get up from the bed? What happened to his body when he got up from the bed? There are kind of questions if you want to really sort of start to think about it. None of it seems important at the time, though. And so it doesn't actually really matter or really take away from the movie in any significant way, even once you know what's going on. But there are still some sort of, like, they are kind of careful with the rules, but then there are other rules that they just... We're not even going to try to come up with a way to explain this, because if we did, it wouldn't be good.
Well, it's like, if it's limited enough, then since it's not repeatable, then it's just something they can kind of get away with. But I got three things left. I got three things left. The first one is the bumblebee pendant.
Yes.
Like, I promise I won't
Grandma's
get mad.
Bumblebee pendant.
And, like, you fucking got mad. Like, I think you've had
I know.
Stroke. That, like, fuck off.
Well, of course she's going to get mad, because she's a mom and her kid just like lied to her, but she said she wouldn't, so points off. I did think in that moment, though, to back to the hospital scene where she says, do you think I'm a bad mother? Are you accusing me of being a bad mother? And then that scene happens and I'm like, yeah, kind of.
Just a little bit. I mean,
you're not actually beating the kid to death all the time like they suspected, but you're not perfect.
You don't have to be that way.
No Mother of the Year award for you.
I'm really big on that.
Not even a mug.
You got to be able to prove it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he didn't. And he says he's not lying to you. And you said to him you wouldn't get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't prove he did it. So just let him eat his roast beef, woman. Please.
I know. Well, that's another thing. I hate that where it's
wasting good food.
Well, wasting good food, but also like not letting you gotta eat.
You gotta eat.
And especially kids. Actually, hang on. So we're just a couple of dudes and we don't have kids, so what do we know necessarily? You have a kid, Brittany.
Yes.
Have you ever been like mad at him and said, well, you don't get to eat dinner tonight and just like go to bed?
No. I have given him the option of finish your food or go to bed, and he's chosen go to bed. But
well, that's different, because at least he had a choice.
Like, I'm mad at you. Your punishment is you can't have food.
Yeah.
Because that's dumb.
Right. Okay.
And abusive.
Yeah. That's what we thought. But it's like, look at an outside perspective.
That's where I stand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Point number two. So he wrote all that really crazy, like, horrific shit in red ink on a paper, and the mom finds it, and it comes out to nothing.
It does come out to nothing. It's just another one of, like, he does weird stuff, he gets in trouble. Yeah. That's all that was.
But he doesn't even get in trouble for this. It's just, here's some...
Well, she finds it. I think it does lead to her being angry at the you don't get to eat scene, because it's just one more thing.
I feel like there's a little bit too much time in between, like, how it's used. Like, maybe... But it doesn't give us a direct question. It's not like she just is like, do you have anything to confess? And then she just whips the paper out. It's not like that. And then I'd be like, oh, it came to something. Here's why she's probably angry. The pendant's an annoyance, but this is bad. But. Yeah.
And that might have been something that could have been additive to the scene where she's like, and what's this? And she slams it down on the table angrily. But yeah, they didn't deal with it at all.
And my very last note. Is they don't have meetings about rainbows. What?
I guess not.
I guess it depends on who we're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's some people who are like, rainbows, gays, I better hold a sign. But we're not.
Well, I guess that's meeting in opposition to rainbows, still meeting about rainbows. I mean, if you.
But
we're talking
about literal rainbows created from droplets of water in the air and light reflecting.
Well, no, we're not, because
it.
He's drawing rainbows.
Yeah, well, that's obviously what he's drawing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He might not understand the science behind what creates a rainbow.
Science!
But it's not like someone just bends over and a rainbow shoots out their ass. Like, we're talking about, like,
depends on what kind of unicorn you are.
We're talking about actual style rainbows. Like, this is the kind of shit he's drawing. Happy skies.
Probably if Bob Ross must have drawn a rainbow at some... Or painted a rainbow at some point, didn't he? A happy little rainbow.
I need scotch for that.
I bet. Well, I've got some rum here, but this scotch over there. There's entirely lost my point. What was the point? Oh, I bet at the General Mills cereal company, they meet about rainbows sometimes because they're always changing the marshmallow shapes and Lucky Charms to try to get you to buy it. They're meeting about rainbows. There are always exceptions, I guess. So, because this is kind of a special thing, we're going to do actually two different ratings here. We're going to do like the normal the normal stars for like enjoyability, quality kind of reasons. And then we're also going to do a scariness rating. So the regular one will be regular. That'll still be out of 5 like it is. But then the scariness rating will be out of 10. So we'll do both. So first, how do we feel about Star?
I'm going to give it 4 stars. It is a really good movie. And if you haven't seen it, I think you should see it.
Well, I hope you've seen it before, because just told you all the secrets and stuff.
We just ruined what a twist.
I think it's still really good.
Yeah.
I think it's still really good either way. But you're supposed to not know at least the first time.
Yeah. But, okay, so the movie is good. I really like it, but it hasn't quite hit the threshold for me where it's just like, oh, this is a 5. Like, it's almost there. It's almost there. It's just, this movie, like, these kinds of things aren't meant for me. And so, because of that, like, I give it a good rating because I still enjoy it. And it is good. But because it isn't for me, like, it's not quite a 5 yet. And so I can understand why other people, like, absolutely love this movie. Like, I can understand. For scariness.
Wait. We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll do like both and both. So I think, yeah, I'm going to say 4 also. I think it's 4 for similar reasons. Like, yeah, it's real good. There's lots of real great stuff about it, but I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's the sweep across. Like, it's all the sweep across's fault. If it wasn't
maybe it's the lack of ghosts.
Maybe just could get it. Well, there's ghosts. There's a ghost in the entire movie. So we're not supposed to know, I guess, but it's
I do want to know about the ghost that was in the little closed off space at the top of the spiral tower.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that. Cause, like, it's kind of weird because it's like, come on, with things and stuff.
Open the door.
Yeah, open the door. I guess somebody got trapped in there and died. So, although I guess it's like he could actually, like, he was really sort of trapped in there with the ghost and he just passed out from the stress of it or from the shock of it or whatever. Is that what happened? Because they get to the hospital, it's like, it wasn't a seizure. So also we found these bruises, but it wasn't a seizure, but he's passed out. Like, something extreme happened in there. So I'm not sure quite what it is, but it's not quite there, but it's real good. Everybody did really like it though. It was, like, nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards. It was the second highest grossing movie that year after episode 1. So it was a big, big deal. So scariness. Scariness.
2.
Hate it when we agree. I hate it because it's not interesting.
Hey.
I mean, it's nice when we agree, like, normally in real life, but it's just not very exciting or dramatic for show purposes when we agree because we can't argue about it.
Sorry, I'll give it a -1.
No,
it's 5. No, it's a 2.
2.
Get over it.
It is 2.
And it's only 2 because we get to see, like, 3 people hanging and they make eye contact and it's just like, ugh.
They do, yeah.
So it's not really scary as much as it is just nasty.
And it's, you know, it's kind of suspenseful and creepy sometimes. So a lot of that, we didn't talk about it, but, like, James Newton Howard's music is mostly really good and adds to the creepiness in most cases. It is weird that it gets happy at the end and then the credits music is creepy again.
It's not even creepy. It's just slow
dreary.
Yeah, it's just slow and dreary after, like, 2 really, really positive things happen. It's just like, well, like, it's still sad, but, like, we have all of this just positivity. It's pulling us up. We know good things are about to happen. Stop it.
Oh, and I forgot. There was one other thing. Watches videos of dead self cliche.
I don't know if that's applicable.
It's not applicable because it's not a cliche, because as far as I know, it only happens this one time. But it's the same, it's the same story mechanism.
I don't think we can actually use it for this, because if he doesn't realize he's dead, then...
But eventually he does. But he does watch the video at the end.
But, like, when he realizes it, he's not watching it anymore.
He was supposed to. They cut it off and just, like, after the white flash, it was supposed to, like, fade back in, and it was his actual speech at the wedding, and he's, like, all sad and says, I love you and stuff. And it's totally correct that it, like, it's actually some really good Bruce Willis acting. Get, like, watch it on the DVD. It's really good. It doesn't belong in the movie, no, which they realized.
No, thank God.
Because what they realized was it got happy and he said goodbye, and then it gets sad again and he says goodbye in the video, kind of. And so it was a double usage of the same feeling, and it didn't work, and they cut it off. So it was, they made the right choice. But you just don't watch it, because in isolation, it was,
I appreciate your hard work.
It was really, it's some really effective Bruce Willis acting. It just doesn't belong in the movie. I think it's close enough. It's the same mechanism, but maybe not. I don't know. I had to at least bring it up.
I disagree for show purposes.
Okay. I don't know why I was just laughing like Greg Miller at the end of that part of the segment, because I normally don't laugh like that, but there it was anyway. And that's all we have to say about the Sixth Sense, or the Tenth Sense, or whatever it might actually be appropriately. We'll see you next time, which is very soon this time.
Later.